Issues Etc. regular guests Pastor Matt Harrison, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be speaking at the premier worship conference of 2011. Sing His Praise, His Love Declare. It's July 27th through the 29th on the campus of Concordia University, Nebraska. For more information on the worship conference, Sing His Praise, His Love Declare, visit Seward2011.org or call 402-643-2983. Welcome back. In the last 10 minutes of this hour, we're going to talk about an Ohio Supreme Court decision involving parental rights, a same-sex couple, and shall we call it birth parent rights? Because the term parent has been twisted around so that it doesn't mean what it used to mean, not even legally sometimes. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute and Austin Muck of the Ruth Institute will be our guests here for the last few minutes. In the second hour of the program, Colleen Carol Campbell will join us. She's connected the dots between the abortion issue, adult narcissism, and the Kaylee Anthony case, national outrage over not only the case but also the acquittal of Casey Anthony in Kaylee Anthony's murder. We'll see what she has to say about that. After that, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway joins us from GetReligion.org. We'll discuss media coverage of Michelle Bachmann, GOP presidential candidate, Lutheran beliefs about the papacy, all in the news. Bob Leko will join us after that. The teachings and the practices of Mike Bickle and the International House of Prayer based in Kansas City will be our subject. We'll answer the question whether or not the International House of Prayer has the hallmarks of a cult. Now, you can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, our Twitter address, @issuesetc, or visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Leave questions or comments on the International House of Prayer and the teachings of Mike Bickle in Kansas City for the second hour of the program and Bob Leko. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
Austin Muck is an intern for the Ruth Institute and a law student at Southern Methodist University. Austin, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
First of all, Jennifer, your reaction in general to the Ohio Supreme Court decision about parental custody, why are you pleased with the outcome?
Well, I'm delighted with the ruling because it basically says that a fit biological parent has the right to decide basic things about her child's upbringing. And if the court had ruled the other way, that is precisely the right that would have been called into question. So I think the court absolutely did the right thing in saying that a person who is not the biological mother and not the adoptive mother is not the mother. And so, therefore, that protects the rights of parents everywhere.
Austin, I'd like your kind of legal summary of this case. What was this case about, and what, in particular, with regard to the law, did the Ohio Supreme Court finally decide?
Well, yeah, Todd, this case was about it was about two women who were dating each other, Miss Mullen and Miss Hobbs. And Miss Mullen decided she wanted to have a child, and Mrs. Hobbs was there, obviously, with her influence in helping her make that decision. But and so Miss Mullen had the child through in vitro fertilization, so Miss Hobbs was not related to the child at all. And so after the child was born, the couple split up just 2 years after the child was born. And there was zero legal adoption in between the both. They did not. Miss Mullen repeatedly decided that she did not want Mrs. Hobbs to adopt a child. And what she did was she gave her the guardian rights and filled out papers saying that Miss Hobbs was the co-parent of the child, but not the legal parent of the child. And so what the court was saying was that, look, if there's a high standard of proof to take someone's parental rights away from her, so they said Miss Mullen is the fit parent of this child, and as long as Miss Hobbs does not relinquish these rights to Miss Hobbs, then the court cannot step in and take away these rights from Miss Mullen.
Now, as Jen said, had they decided for some kind of joint custody based upon the assertions on the other side of the case, what would that have done? You talk about bright line law here. What would that have done?
Well, that would have created a gray area in the law to where that Ms. Hobbs, or I guess any same-sex partner of a mother could be able to assert rights to a child that she did not have legal rights or biological rights to the child, merely because the court would step in and say, hey, look, this person, you know, is hanging around the child a lot, and the mother portrayed her partner out as a child for a couple years. But even though she might have refused not to let the other person adopt it, it would put the decision in the court's hands to decide who the parent was, as opposed to the actual mother.
Jennifer, this really goes to something we've discussed many times here on Issues Etc., and that is the changing, and now it appears challenged, legal definition of the word parent, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly right. There is a movement within the law and among some legal scholars to redefine parenthood. They want to no longer privilege biology, is the way they would put it. And, of course, organizations like the Lambda Legal Education and Defense Fund are at the forefront of that, you know, sort of devaluing of biology as the primary way that we do custody. You know, I want to amplify something that Austin was saying to you, and that is that these two women had a variety of legal documents that they had drawn up between them. One of them, for example, was power of attorney. And the Ohio Supreme Court looked at that and said, you know, wait a second, a power of attorney document is something that's revocable. And in fact, she did revoke it, right? And so, you know, you can name anybody to be your power of attorney for some period of time. But parenthood is something quite different. Parenthood is a relationship that is, by its nature, not revocable. And so I think it's very important that the Ohio Supreme Court drew that distinction and said, you know, these little legal documents that they made up to call themselves co-parents or whatever it is, that term co-parent doesn't have any legal meaning at all. And so the court, I think, correctly declined to get involved and interpret those documents in a way to favor the non-biological parent. Yeah, because, and that's what they were being asked to do, right? The Lambda Legal Education and Defense Fund was asking that the court basically take those documents as proof that this woman intended to surrender half of her parental rights to this other woman. And, you know, the court is saying, whoa, there's a really high standard of proof involved to show that somebody is surrendering their parental rights.
Why is it essential, Jennifer, that the legal definition of parents, as it pertains to cases like custody and adoption and everything else, remain rooted in biology?
Well, because look, it has to be rooted in something, and when a child is brought into the world by their parents, there's typically an unrebuttable legal presumption that the woman who gives birth to that child is the mother of that child. And you can lose your parental rights if you are the natural parent. You can lose your parental rights only by doing something kind of you know, out of the ordinary, like abandoning the child or neglecting the child or being found to be unfit. Or you can voluntarily relinquish your parental rights. And so if you haven't done any of those things, the default position, of course, has to be that the biological parent is the parent. And one of the briefs that was written in favor of this case, it was written by the Alliance Defense Fund. And in that case, they cite case law saying, you know, look, the child is not the creature of the state. The relationship between a parent and a child, between a mother and a child, is something that the state does not have the right to interfere with or interpose itself into. And if you've got a fit parent, the presumption absolutely has to be that they know what they're doing and that they get to do, you know, what they want. And certainly in terms of who gets to see the child or spend time with the child, that's the parent's prerogative to decide that. So that's why I think this case is a very important case and is significant and rightly decided by the Ohio Supreme Court.
One last quick question for you, Austin. Had the couple here undergone a formal adoption, it would be a different story, wouldn't it?
Right.
With about a minute here.
Yes. I mean, the mother would know that she is fully relinquishing her custody, as opposed to where if she fills out a couple of papers saying, you know, this person's going to help me parent the child. I mean, it's not completely understood to the person that person is going to relinquish her sole custody of the child. And so the adoption puts the child at the forefront saying, hey, custody is at issue here, and here's what we're going to do. I'm going to relinquish my sole custody of the child, and this person will stand on equal legal footing with me with regards to determining how to raise the child.
Austin Muck is an intern for the Ruth Institute and a law student at Southern Methodist University. Austin, thank you very much for your help.
Thank you.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You can find out more about the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Todd.
In the second hour of the program, we're going to spend some time with Colleen Carol Campbell for the first few minutes. Casey Anthony and her daughter, Kaylee Anthony, have raised such a fervor in the United States. The outrage, even before the not guilty verdict, was palpable everywhere, and it's even more so now that the verdict has been handed down. Now, I can understand the outrage, but is there an inconsistency in our outrage? In other words, well, what if Kaylee Anthony weren't 3 or 4? What if she were, in fact, an infant, perhaps even an unborn infant? Now it's not just Casey Anthony, unfit, terrible mother, taking the life of her child. It's a lot of women, millions every year. Drawing the line between abortion and the Kaylee Anthony case with Colleen Carol Campbell in the second hour of the program. Then Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us. We'll talk about media coverage of GOP candidate Michelle Bachmann and Lutheran beliefs regarding the papacy. We'll talk about the International House of Prayer and Mike Bickle with Bob Lico later in the second hour. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hour two of Issues Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon in 7 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.